This is Peter Wallace. I'm at the Festival of Homiletics in Atlanta, Georgia, and with me is the Reverend Dr. Jim Somerville, pastor of the First Baptist Church in the city of Washington, D.C. Jim has been the MC of the last two festivals.
That's right.
And this time is here to learn, finally.
Just sitting on the pew, soaking it up.
There you go. Is it better that way, or?
It's different that way. I'm not having to think about what comes next all the time. I'm
right.
Just able to enjoy it.
You were on the Day One program a couple of times last year, so our listeners are probably already aware of what a unique voice you have as a preacher.
Oh, thank you.
And a good voice.
Thank you.
And you managed to say interesting things, and I understand that your sermons are being archived. Tell me about that.
I got a call from the librarian at the Theological Library at Boston University, who said he had heard me preach three times, and he said each one of those was good. I know that every preacher can preach one sermon that is a bell ringer, but I've been surprised to hear you those different times, and each of those has been good. Nice compliment coming
mm-hmm.
from him. But he did say he wanted to archive those sermons so that the seminary students there at Boston University could take a look at the way preachers have to do this kind of thing week after week. It would be nice if you only had to preach every once in a while. You could spend a lot of time getting everything together and making sure it was just right before you preached it. But Sunday keeps coming week after week, and it is hard to pull all those pieces together and say a word that is the right word for that day, for that group of people.
So what is your secret?
My secret
yes.
is to sweat a lot and pray a lot and depend on the Holy Spirit. And it helps to have had some experience. I guess I've been preaching for 20 years now. So it's not as scary as it used to be back in those early days. You know, I would get to a Saturday night and I would just be thinking, this is the worst sermon that has ever been prepared, and I'm going to have to stand up and deliver this tripe tomorrow, and people are going to walk out. And lots of praying and struggling in those days.
How much does your week living among that community affect your sermon on that next Sunday?
Oh, a great deal. I think when you know what text you're going to preach from, as you do, if you're a lectionary preacher, pick one of those four and start working toward that. That as you're living with that text during the week, all these other things begin to stick to it.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be at the grocery store paying for your groceries, and somebody will say something that sticks.
Mm-hmm.
Or you'll see something and say, oh, that's what I'm preaching about this Sunday. So I find that really helps. It just seems to have that sort of ability to gather up all the good stuff that happens during the week. And you can roll some of that into the sermon.
Now, your church is in a very interesting part of Washington, D.C., and I know you get out in the community and kind of like Jesus did.
Well.
How does that inform your preaching? Because I'm sure that some of the folks you meet out there are not
right.
your typical congregants.
Right. Yeah, First Baptist Church is in DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C. It's home to a large part of Washington's gay population.
Mm-hmm.
Those are not the only people who live there,
mm-hmm.
but some of them are. And it really also just seems to attract interesting people from all over the city, all over the country.
Not what you
world.
Would consider your typical Baptist.
Well, right. And certainly, you know, having served Baptist churches in the South and
mm-hmm.
now being in DuPont Circle in Washington, it's a different kind of experience. But it does create the challenge day after day of sharing the gospel with people who might not be all that open to it or receptive to it. And it makes me think hard about how do you preach the gospel to people like these?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to reach my neighborhood, reach my community here with the gospel, how will I have to do it so it can get a hearing in a place like this?
Mm-hmm.
It's really challenging.
I can imagine. Your church is also, of course, very close to the center of political power in our government. What?
A few blocks from the White House.
Right.
Right.
What role, do you have a unique role as a prophet as in your preaching, or is that something that all preachers should engage in, or what's your philosophy on that?
I think my preaching is often prophetic. It is hardly ever political.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a distinction that is important to
mm-hmm.
make.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting in the Bible that the prophets really didn't emerge on the scene until there were kings. You notice this in
mm-hmm.
the Bible? That
that's true.
Suddenly there are these prophets, and they came around at the same time the kings came along, because somebody needed to speak truth to power and
mm-hmm.
say, if we are going to be God's people, we're going to have to live a certain way and love a certain way. So I am still saying to the church in Washington, D.C., if we're going to be God's people, we're going to have to live a certain way and love a certain way. And sometimes that living, that loving, seem to contradict
mm-hmm.
what is public policy.
Mm-hmm.
And people can hear that. I might not always, you know, take that on directly and say, this thing that happened in Congress last week goes against the grain of Christianity.
Right.
But those people who are paying attention to both that public discourse and the discourse of Christianity know the difference between those two.
Mm-hmm.
And part of my job is to point out the difference.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes. Tell me a little bit about the typical way you prepare a sermon. You touched on that a little bit about living your life through the week, but what's your typical week like in terms of preparing?
It's always a good question. I remember hearing Fred Craddock's answer about that, and I loved it. But
you want to copy it?
But I'll tell you what I do from week to week. I start on Monday morning. I have coffee with some colleagues. We meet at Starbucks over in Chinatown up on the second floor. Three or four of us, typically, lectionary preachers, and we talk about the text for the coming week. And already by that time, we have usually decided on a text that
mm-hmm.
we will use, and have some ideas about how to get into it. So that conversation that goes on for about an hour and a half is really a good way to get started.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday afternoon, I like to sit down, and if it's a Greek text, I try to translate it. If it's
mm-hmm.
Hebrew, I just trust the commentaries. That's just the way it is. But spend some time with the commentaries and with the text itself. Wednesday, I don't typically do anything with the sermon. Thursday is my day off. That's when the ideas are really beginning to percolate. But I let them percolate in the back of my brain and not in the front of my brain. On Friday, I'm trying to sketch out some sort of outline of the sermon. Saturday is my writing day. And I really try to reserve most of that day for putting those thoughts into words so that I'm ready to preach on Sunday.
Do you manuscript your sermon? Do you preach from that? Or?
Uh-huh. I do. I've tried several different
mm-hmm.
ways. That's the way that seems most reliable for me.
What is your greatest joy from preaching?
In preaching?
Yes.
My greatest joy. I do love to preach. Let me say that from the beginning.
Yes.
There's this awful struggle that goes on every week to get the sermon together. It feels like labor and deliver it most of the time. But I love what I discover in that process. I absolutely love it when there is something in that text that I didn't see before, that I see this time. You know, 3 years ago, missed it, but this time I see it. The passage about doubting Thomas from a few weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
I remember looking at that little line that says it was the next week, and the disciples were gathered in the upper room, and Thomas was with them. And I was about to go on past, and I thought, wait a minute, Thomas was with them.
Mm.
Thomas, the doubter, the unbeliever, was gathered with the believers. And in the sermon that I preached, I talked a little about the rise of fundamentalism in America, these
mm-hmm.
5 points of fundamentalism.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was that you have to believe that Jesus rose bodily from the dead. If you don't, you're not a true believer. Get out of
mm-hmm.
the church. How interesting that Thomas, who could not believe in the resurrection, an unbeliever by fundamentalist
mm-hmm.
standards, was gathered with the believers. And that was a good thing, because that was when Jesus walked into the room.
Right.
And so the sermon was really to mm-hmm. deal with the question of is it okay to be in the church if you don't believe in the bodily resurrection? You know, is there a place at the table for people who are still struggling with that sort of thing? Or maybe not struggling, maybe they've decided that just didn't happen that way. Is there room at the table for them? It was a week later, the disciples were in the upper room, and Thomas was with them. And I just hadn't seen that. Mm-hmm. And when I saw it, I thought, oh, that's good. That'll preach. And I love that. I just love it when that sort of thing happens. I love it when people get it. I love the sermon that happens between the preacher and the congregation. I love the sermons that people preach back to me on the basis of what they've heard. So there's a lot of stuff going on in the preaching event, and as I prepare to preach and after the sermon has been delivered, it's just a living thing that goes on.
Final question is, do you think there's a single message that people need to hear these days?
A single message.
Or what is the most important message that you would like to communicate in your preaching?
I'm trying to think about the congregation seated
right
out there in front of me with their faces turned up and their, you know, those expectant looks on their faces. Jim, what is the one
right
thing that you need to say to us? I think, for me at least, I find that more and more as I read the Gospels and deal with the Gospels and discover the Jesus who is in those pages, I fall in love with that person.
Mm.
I was reading something just recently in the Gospel of Luke where Jesus is talking to the Pharisees and denouncing them. Woe to you, you Pharisees. And one of the scribes pulls him aside and says, teacher, when you talk about the Pharisees like that, by implication, you are denouncing us as well. And Jesus turns to him and says, well, woe to you, scribes. You know? And I read that. I'm sure I've read it before, but I laughed out loud and I said out loud, I love this guy.
Yeah.
I love this guy who can say this sort of thing. And so I think my job week after week is to take, you know, the passion, the spirit, the love, the labor of Jesus, and to somehow put that into the flesh of words that make people love him too.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.